Hey, before we get started with this week's episode, I just want to give you a quick announcement. This is Deidre, and I am here to tell you that we have something brand new and exciting. And in case you haven't heard, I'm going to let Megan share with you how you can join our Patreon community and why you should.
Yeah, we just started our Dauntless Grace community, and it's through Patreon. And by joining us, you are working with us to support our mission. You can access exclusive content like behind the scenes videos that, are just mine and Deidre's faces with some special guests, plus bonus content from a lot of our really, really special guests. You can join a vibrant community and enjoy special perks like retreat discount pricing. So head on over to dauntlessgrace.org/community to find out more.
And there's more than just that. So if you didn't hear, you should go check out that link that she is telling you about because we also have monthly coffee and chat calls where we talk Enneagram. And for the next level up, quarterly co group calls with therapists. So I'm telling you, this is a really cool community to be part of, and you don't want to miss this opportunity.
Dauntlessgrace.org/community. Welcome to the Dauntless Grace Exchange. I'm Megan.
And I'm Deidre. And today we have back with us one of our beloved guests. This is her third time on the pod. The last one was actually to celebrate our 100th episode. So if you haven't listened to that one yet, definitely go check it out. Dr. Allison Cook is back with us. And for those of you who don't know, let me just read her official bio, even though we have so much more to say than that about her. But Dr. Allison Cook is a psychologist and the author of now three books, including her newest book, which is still on pre-order, I Shouldn't Feel This Way. We've talked to her about her last book, The Best of You, and also Boundaries for Your Soul. For over 20 years, Allison has helped women, ministry leaders, couples, and families learn how to heal painful emotions, develop confidence from the inside out, forge healthy relationships, and fully live out their God-given potential. So welcome back, Dr. Cook. We are so glad that you are with us again.
Oh, I love our conversations. It's so fun to see you guys. And please call me Allison.
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, we refer to you as Allison like we're friends when we're not talking to you. So
exactly, exactly.
I have a quick story about your newest book. I have three daughters who are all now in their 20s, like 20, 20, and 21. They're all three in that age. And they're all in the heart triad. We've got a two, a three, and a four on the Enneagram. So growing through the teen years together and learning all these things about themselves, we've had so many conversations about sorting through emotions. And the youngest of those three is away right now. And she follows your Instagram religiously. She usually hearts and comments on things before I've even seen it. And you just were able to speak to her to give her permission to own, like have her own feels when a lot of people told her a lot of her life, she had like too big of feelings. And so she, you know, we like tagged each other on some giveaway you were doing. And the morning she was really struggling and she was like in this prayer time with some friends. And one of them said, I just feel like the Lord wants to show you something about how he's meeting you. And she saw Jesus give her a book in this like moment of just kind of like reflection. And within an hour, she had won one of your pre-order giveaway books. And she's like, Jesus literally gave me a book. And it was yours. So she's so excited. And so I got a little sneak peek of parts of it through her PDF.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
You never
Small
know.
World.
Yeah. You never know when
gosh.
You offer those things, how the Lord can even use that as such a gift to someone. So thank you.
Thank you for telling me that. I have such ambivalent feelings. I talk about complicated feelings. I have a lot of complicated feelings about social media. So that was felt like a gift to me to just go the Lord to say, no, I use a lot of different things, you know?
Right. That's right. He used that to speak very prophetically to her right where she was that day and what she needed. So to hear that you were literally the title was like, you shouldn't feel bad about these feelings. Like it was just like, you see me, Lord. So thank you for this. Tell us some more about what's been going on since we've seen you last.
Yeah. Well, The Best of You came out, and then I had a two-book contract. So, and I had this idea. And so I turned around and just thought, well, let's write it. It was kind of fresh in my mind. It's something I've really used in my life. really a lot of my life, but I hadn't really had language for it. It's often what I use with clients. It's a sort of a framework. It's not really a therapeutic framework, but it's like a naming framework. And so that's really what I've spent the last year doing is writing the book and then also graduating. We got one daughter graduating from college and one son getting married. So
Wow.
that's all the things. The adult parenting, which is less time, as you know, there's less time involved, but the time that is involved is very high stakes and very important.
Yes, a little more intense for sure.
Yeah,
And
yeah,
expensive.
yeah.
And expensive. A wedding? Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, and expensive, true.
Yeah, we thought the diapers and formula stage were going to be the expensive parts.
Oh my gosh, flights and weddings and graduations and yeah.
Oh my
So much.
gosh. Oh, you just said something that I was really excited about. Oh, I saw, okay, you have ambivalence towards social media sometimes. I just want to say that your marketing that you've been doing for this book, where you presented different emotions and said, you've always thought I shouldn't feel this emotion, but let me give you a truth to kind of counter that. I have seen those shared on my Facebook feed from so many people that I didn't even know knew who you were and didn't even know followed you. And they just are getting shared everywhere. And your truth is just spreading. And it's just such a powerful message. And so, yeah, please don't shy away from the social media because it is such an impactful tool to make sure that people are reading and seeing what they need to in the moment. And as an example, yeah, I recently started a new job and I had two job offers in front of me. One was a more corporate job where I think I would have been happy, and it was a good salary. And the other one was a little bit less money, but I was excited because it was more of a ministry job that I really wanted to pour into. And one seemed like the wise choice, and one seemed like the exciting choice to me. And I had a lot of people speaking into that, and I decided to go with what I wanted, which was the lower paying nonprofit, more exciting, challenging job. And I had a great first day this week, and I called Deidre last night. And I'm like, why do I feel so guilty about this choice? Like, I'm so worried about like not spiritually bypassing myself. Did I God bypass this decision? And she was like, Megan, you didn't do anything wrong though. Like, you are operating in who you are. You're looking at all of the decisions. You are walking with the Lord. You're going into a ministry job, for crying out loud. Like, you're not, going into something that is sinful. You're like all of this stuff. And then this morning I opened my Instagram and the very first thing I saw was your post about why do I feel guilty? And it was like, really objectively, and ask people, have you done anything wrong? If you haven't done anything wrong, probably it's not guilt. It's some kind of conditioning from your childhood or some kind of drama response built into you. And I was like, okay, that's it. I hear you, Lord.
Wow, that's amazing. Guilt, man, it's a tough one. That's interesting because this morning I was praying about that, and that's kind of where I've come at with social media is I'm like, okay, Lord, it's a tool. How do I use it? Because I'm a human, right? We get the mixed motives mixed in. We get the, and then you get the dopamine. Frankly, we're all humans. We get hooked on it. There's that piece. I'm just trying to like get in and do what I need to do, but also not let it do the thing it's kind of designed to do to us, the comparison and the dopamine and the addiction and all of that. So it's a battle a little bit, and I'm learning how to do it. And then that's where you also see that it can do a lot of good. And when it's an educational tool that gets people helpful information, it's amazing. So I appreciate hearing that. It means a lot.
I'm just so excited to read the book. I mean, like, just your little snippets on Instagram have me hooked. I'm like, oh, I need this for sure. Like, I've done so much work with emotions and IFS and Atlas of the Heart with Brené Brown and Enneagram. And I'm like, yeah, another emotions tool, another way to look at this. Please give me all frameworks.
I got to thinking about it. Because I was like, why is this so, why are we so unclear about our emotions? And so I was researching it, and it was like, even in the field of psychology, so let alone the church, and the church is behind in their understanding of emotions, but even in the field of psychology, nobody really started studying and understanding emotions until like the late, like really, it was like attachment theory, where they begin to understand the impact of attachment on children. And, those studies where they would notice the different attachment styles would yield different emotions in different kids. And then kind of there's this awareness, oh, our emotions are conditioned by these relationships and by our environments and how different attachment styles affect our emotional health and our ability to regulate emotions. And that's fairly new. I mean, most of us were not raised, you know, if you were raised in the 70s, 80s, most of the 90s, we didn't have a vocabulary for emotions growing up. People weren't talking about emotions. And so, of course, even in the best of families, you know, so take out toxicity, take out spiritual bypassing, even in the best of families, it's like we don't talk about them, which means we exile them. You know, they're parts of us that are gets exiled, or, you know, we're too kind of attached to them and don't understand how to differentiate from them. And so it really is kind of still, it's like the body and the emotions. I say to people, it's like we kind of figured out the mind in Western civilization. Everybody's so heady and rationalization, logic, and all that. And that's fine. And then the spiritual piece, you know, if you're a faith person, you got a lot of that. But man, the emotions and the body, the nervous system, whoo, we are still barely kind of figuring them out. And they're hugely important to being a whole person, to being a holistic person.
I'm actually really glad you said that because one of the questions I had for you was reconciling this embodiment of where a lot of our emotions come from and things like cognitive behavioral therapy or dialectical behavioral therapy that really do focus a little bit more on the cognitive, the thinking, you know, and kind
Yeah.
of like separating from emotions as though the emotional part of us can really take us out. And I'm just curious, how do we dance that? How do we write
Yeah.
things?
I mean, to me, again, how I look at it is it's we are mind, we are emotion, we are body, and we are spiritual beings. I don't really, you know, a lot of people get into the fine hairs of what's the difference between thoughts and feelings, what's the difference between spirit and soul. I'm just trying to be pragmatic. We have emotions, we have thinking, we have spirit, we have body, nervous system, and they are all interwoven. That's just the facts. They are all interwoven. And, you know, as a clinician, how I'll approach it is as I'm with a client, you know, I'm like, again, I've learned this over the years. And that's kind of what I was trying to do with I shouldn't feel this way is break down the process. So there are these three practices in the book. Essentially, they're practices. I call them steps, but they're really practices because they're things you have to work at. And the first one is naming. But what I'm trying to get at, and it kind of gets to answering your question, is, you know, when I'm working with someone or working with myself, the first thing I have to do is get to the root of the what am I dealing with here? Am I dealing with an irrational thought, or am I dealing with a nervous system response, or am I dealing with an emotion I need to feel? I don't know. You know, in myself, my client, I first have to ask myself that question. What is the name of the thing that I'm dealing with? And it might show up initially, and that's where the title of the book came up. For me, it was all just a big bunch of I shouldn't feel what I'm feeling. You know, I don't know what it is, but I don't want to feel it. Or I'm mad at myself for feeling it. And so for me, the very first, and I learned this through IFS, the very, but I put n a name to it with I shouldn't feel this way. The very first thing I have to name is, oh my gosh, when I feel that, whatever that is, and sometimes it's jacked up nervous system, and sometimes it's a big up ball of thoughts and feelings and past trauma that I need to tease out. Whatever the I shouldn't feel this is the very first thing I have to name. Oh, something's going on. Right. And then this second practice that's in the book, which is probably going to be the least glamorous to talk about and won't get shared all over social media, you know, but I think it's probably the most important practice is what I call framing. It's the discernment, to use a biblical term, but it's the reflection, the inquiry that I do feel something. And then I've got to frame it because I can't go to braving. I can't get to the action until I understand what it is. And the framing is this place in between, is what I call them. They're places in between. Brené Brown calls it a pause. The word from religious studies is liminal places, liminality. There's a place in between of pondering, of Rilke calls it, you know, loving the questions themselves, of going, what is happening here? Reflection. You know, there's a lot of different ways that it's kind of lost from our modern vocabulary. And so that was a long-winded way to get back to your question, which is as a clinician, what I've trained myself to do is as a sort of eclectic clinician is to go, here's what I'm seeing in front of me. I don't know if this person needs some CBT intervention. I don't know if this person needs some trauma-informed somatic intervention. I try to use a trauma-informed lens with everything. I don't know if this person needs some parts work. All of those are really valid options that add a different seasons in our lives. But I'm got to frame it first and ask a lot of questions and really slow myself down and be present to what's actually happening before I'm going to know what practical thing needs to happen. Sometimes the practical thing that needs to happen is a boundary. Sometimes the practical thing, I mean, you could go on and on, but that was the whole point of the book, was try to really zoom in on this second practice, which is how are we framing what's happening? And so as a clinician, I'm aware. Like, I just did an interview for my podcast with Monique Coven. You guys may know her. She's the host of the Healing Trauma podcast. And she was talking about a really negative experience she had with CBT, where everyone was telling her to do thoughts and she was having a trauma response. And I was like, I get it. A misapplied tool is really toxic. And also, that doesn't mean the tool itself is necessarily a bad tool. Right. And I mean, that was a really long-winded way to ask your question. But this whole, and so this first practice of naming, I think really naming things, like what is happening? Is there religious trauma here? Because if there's spiritual or religious trauma, I am not going to go near a Bible verse for this person.
Right.
But if what's happening, I did another podcast interview with a guy who was like, what I was dealing with was the dark night of the soul. I needed spiritual language. That naming is so important on the front end to frame it before we're even going to know. Now, again, I'm kind of talking to you guys because I know you guys go deep on this stuff. The book gets more practical, but what I'm really trying to encourage people to do is slow down enough to really get clear about what you're naming and framing before you even consider jumping in with a solution, because that's where we get in trouble. We have to slow ourselves down in the process.
And the third practice, don't leave us hanging. Or do
The third practice,
we need to get the book, right?
no, thank you for bearing with me on the long-winded answer. The third practice is braving. So naming on the front end, that practice of really getting clear, what is it we're dealing with? Framing, which is the big picture. What's contributed to it? What are the facts? What have we tried in the past that didn't work? What have we tried that has worked? What doesn't work? And really being curious about that. The braving is like, okay, all right, we've got enough understanding. This is the path we're going to take. And so, but braving is also iterative. Braving is, all right, this is, and I apply this through the process of, I apply this to the process of examining your thoughts. I apply this to emotions. I apply this to nervous system responses. I apply this to the relationship. So I go through a bunch of chapters of trying to apply it in all these different situations. But before you can get to the situation, you've got to kind of understand that you're going to have to run a process. And you think about someone who goes to therapy. They're trusting that that expert is going to, and this is true for medicine too, is going to do that work on the front end. If I go to a doctor and they say to me, I'm not sure what this is, but I'm committed to working with you till we get to the bottom of it. That's the doctor I'm going to trust, not the doctor who says, I can cure you tomorrow. And that's what I'm trying to
As long
teach
as I
people.
can cut you open and see what the problem is.
Yes. Yeah. And as friends, right? The friend I'm going to trust is the friend who sits with me and goes, I don't totally get it, but I want you to know I'm going to be with you in it until we do figure out what's going on with you. That's the friend I want to be. And that's the friend I want to encourage others to be. And so we're going to linger for a while on this naming, man. I don't know what it is that I'm struggling with. It's hard. It's a tangled up knot, but that in and of itself is a really healthy practice to really honor and name. And that's what I want us to become for each other.
That's really uncomfortable for me. I would just like you to know.
She's an Enneagram one. She knows the right thing and she would like to offer it to you.
Oh,
I'm sitting here
interesting.
going, oh, that hurts. But
I
also,
don't
she's
want
like,
to do that.
you're so
She's like,
right.
no, I know what they need. I know it better than they do. Can I just tell them?
But the truth is, I don't even always know what I know, but it's easier to kind of
I
gut instinct just
know.
move than I don't have to sit with the discomfort of
I
the struggle of
know.
it, you know? So, like, what are some ways for those of us who may are a little more challenged in liminal spaces? Like, what are some ways we can engage with that without so much
Oh,
frustration?
well, honestly, I love what you just said. You named it. You were like, this is hard for me. And I think it's really valid. But again, I know you well enough to know that you're not that person going in out of a protector part, going, I'm going to fix this for you. You might be that person that's like, man, I hate this. Can I bring you a meal?
I
You
appreciate
know?
your vote of
And
confidence.
that's really valid. Like, you know, I get that. But even that naming, right? That naming, that self-awareness to go, you know, oh, I hate this for you. I want to know, you know, I want to get to the root of it right away. That's a naming that leads to greater intimacy and more transparency between two people.
That's good.
It feels like a really good overlay with IFS, like in Boundaries for Your Soul, when you lay out kind of the getting curious about, I know that more parts work, and so maybe that's a solution, but some of this the steps towards learning those parts are the same, like kind of practical steps to figure out how to name something, getting curious, finding out like maybe is it located in my body? Is it, you know, the stuff that you would do for IFS might be a really good way. I haven't read your book. Would those kind of overlap a little bit?
Exactly. And that was the hardest part for me for this book, because what I'm trying to do, the process when I'm doing IFS with someone, it's like you're kind of trying to get and name it. What's the part? Loosely, you know, it's like the naming isn't, it's like the part is whatever, but you kind of know it when you have a sense of it. And then you're kind of trying to frame it. You're just trying to get really curious about it. What? Tell me more. Tell me more without an agenda, right? That's the framing. And then the braving is, what do you need? What does the part actually need? So what I say kind of in a footnote in the book, because I could, you know, was just essentially this is a meta framework that I use with parts, but you can also just use in life for I've got a big emotional reaction to my kid or to my spouse or to my friend or to my parent. And okay, naming. The first name is I've got a big emotional reaction. That's for most people, that's a huge step. Just to go, oh my gosh, I have a big emotional reaction to this person.
And naming it
That's
is what gives you the distance then, right? Like
correct.
it's you're unblending from it then. If you can put a name
Exactly.
to it that's not yours, then all of a sudden it's an automatic distance.
And so it's not even just necessarily getting to the emotion, right? Because sometimes the first thing you're naming, that's why I say for me, is just I have a lot of like feelings about not wanting to feel this way. Or a naming is, this is really complicated. I'm not going to figure this out today. That's a naming, right? And there's freedom in that. Okay, I've got to run a process now, right? And so it's kind of a meta framework that you can do in life when you're facing a challenge that we also do with our parts when we're kind of doing the internal work.
That's good. I love this, and I feel like there's a lot of freedom for I don't I'm not as good at a gut intuition. Let's rush into the next thing. I'm not saying I don't ever rush into things. I'm saying I don't always instinctively know the right thing. And so I don't trust myself a lot there. So I enjoy a liminal space slightly more maybe than an Enneagram one. But you know, there's a part like an exile, if we're going to talk about IFS stuff that I've recently identified, but I'm like, I know I need to go sit with that part. So, but I'm not ready to do that yet. And so part of me is like, oh, well, I know what the right thing is, and I'm not going to do it. I'm not ready to do it yet. And I know that's going to take a lot of work, and I need to make sure there's time, and I need to be alone, and all this stuff. And so I'll deal with that when I can. And I'm like feeling guilty that I know the right thing. Why don't I just go do it? And like, I feel like you just gave me freedom because I'm like, no, I've named it,
That's
and I'm
it.
in the framing process right now. Like, I
That's it.
know what the part is, but also I've spent a lot of time thinking about it before going to talk about what has contributed to this. Where do I see it show up? And so
Exactly.
I feel like that's where I am with that. I'm like, oh, I'm in the framing part. When I get to the braving part, I know how to do that. I know how to go talk to that part, but I
Yes.
don't need to yet.
It even that framing gives you a freedom. And that's what I find with myself. I, like you, I wonder if it runs by Enneagram. I tend to, and I say this in the book, I love to live in the framing.
A four, so I like to, I'm
Oh,
always just
interesting.
processing.
Right? Yeah, to a fault. So for me, the braving is sometimes that it's like, all right, I got to take all this and then actually do something with it, right? That's hard. That's why I call it a braving, partly because it rhymed, but partly because it's not, it's hard. But what I say in the book is these places in between, and to make you know, maybe, you know, Deirdre, to set you at ease, a place in between could be as simple as taking a deep breath.
That's really easy for
Literally.
her. She loves breathing.
Everything got tight when you said that, but no, I know. I need it.
You're like, no, that's not easy. The other thing I'll say is like sometimes a place in between, so is like, if I'm dealing with a complicated problem, is like, and it's kind of gets at compartmentalizing. And you know, this is sort of the IFS thing too. It's like, you know how we say in IFS when you're working with an exile, like, can you check in on that part of you each day? You're trying to get consistency in that secure attachment, right? And so a place in between could be, you know, I take a walk every afternoon. And during that walk, that's my time to do some framing work, to kind of check in. What's going on? What am I feeling now? What am I thinking now? How am I dealing with this now? What's new? Because that's how our body is designed to metabolize information. But if we don't kind of consciously, I say to people, maybe do it while you're gardening. I think for me, sitting in a room by myself is hard. If I'm actively doing like a task around the house, that can become really fruitful framing time for me, where I take out the AirPods. That's the big thing for me. I'm not listening to a podcast. And I'm being attentive to myself. It's a practice of mindfulness, really. I'm being intentional about, and this is where I kind of blend mindfulness. I was saying, I said this in my master class. I don't know if this tracked or not, but you guys will tell, it was like kind of what I do is like mindfulness plus embodiment. And then there's a little bit of CBT divided by IFS. Like it's all kind of in there because for me, mindfulness feels like I'm just supposed to be absent of thought, and that doesn't work for me. It's more, and where IFS has helped me, it's more being intentional about tuning in to myself, to the parts of myself. And the place in between is just that time to, without any agenda and without trying to rush to a solution, give myself the gift of, what am I feeling? What am I thinking? What do I kind of want out of this situation? What new facts surfaced? To just kind of do that self-reflection. Sometimes I do it in partnership with God. You know, it's like, God, help me. You know, sometimes it's prayer, but it's very much tuning into my own inner being. And there's a lot of different words for that, you know, but for me, this naming and framing has really been helpful. Hopefully it'll be helpful to other people too.
I think that is. And I think even just the example you gave of how you do that is helpful to me. Like, I do a lot of thinking while, which would be my framing time, on folding laundry and wiping kitchen counters. That's just a thing that's, I got my body's moving, so I don't have to distract myself from it, and I can still free my mind for that work. That's good. Okay, not to completely change gears, but we do want to change gears to finish this out. We have a listener from that has a question for you, that who they just finished your Boundaries for the Soul book. So
No, the best of you.
the best of you, I'm sorry, the best of you, your last book. And she has a question. So I was wondering if I could play that and let you answer her here.
Yeah,
Work?
I love that.
All right. So we're going to see how the technology works, but here it is.
In the last part of The Best of You, Dr. Allison has a very simple quote, which is this: expressing your voice is both vulnerable and powerful. This quote blew my mind because, yes, vulnerable. We've heard this word. We've all read Brené's work, Dr. Brown's work. I'll refer to the ladies with their doctor credentials. Vulnerability is taking the armor off. It feels lowly. It feels sometimes scary, to walk forward in vulnerability and share something. I have never associated the word powerful with vulnerable before, and I would just really love to hear Allison, Dr. Allison, unpack a little bit how she arrived at that conclusion of pairing vulnerability with being powerful.
All right. The floor is
Wow,
yours.
that's a great question. I think power at its best is deeply vulnerable, and I think that's true, especially for women. But I think that anybody, and I think in part because power in many ways for many women is daunting, to use yours, it's who am I to step in to take up space and claim some power in this room and some authority. Most of us have been conditioned to not do that for a variety of reasons, which is a lot of what the best of you is about. So, and then the paradox of that is because I think as we are aware of, oh, I could make a mistake using my authority. I could make a mistake using my voice. I could make a mistake. That's the vulnerability. Therein lies the very essence of why we need to use our power. But the paradox of it is the minute we kind of step through it, there is that vulnerability of kind of a humility. I could get it wrong. And that's scary. I think that's the healthy part of power, right? And I, when it, in the new book, I talk a lot about being a namer. And it's similar. There's a power in naming things. And it terrifies me to really name something, to go, I think this is what's happening here. Because naming is powerful. It's powerful. And if you get it wrong, you can hurt somebody, you know? Right? It's, but we have to do our best. We have to do our best within the human limitations that we have in our God-given, you know, gifts and to the best of our ability to name and to use our voices to say, this is what I think is happening. Because we're not serving the world by playing small. And so to me, they're very much interwoven, the both and the paradox of that I'm gonna name this, I'm gonna use my voice here. And man, I also am not in control of how that ripples out into the world. Someone could misuse that, right? Even if I get it right, someone else could misuse it. I'm not ultimately powerful, even in using my power. And so that's just a little bit of that tenuous relationship, I think, as humans, knowing we're fallible, even at our best, where, but we still, God has given us agency. He's given us some, you know, authority that we want to steward and use well. So to me, that's very vulnerable.
That's really good.
Yeah, I'm torn between wanting to follow that with either a Taylor Swift quote or an Ann Voskamp quote. And I got parts warring here. I don't know where to go. I'll go to Ann
Want
Voskamp.
to hear both. Taylor Swift.
Well, Taylor Swift, to one of her songs, she just says, "Never be so polite you forget your power. Never wield such power you forget to be polite." And I'm like, that would be really cool if you could replace vulnerable, but it has too many syllables.
That's good.
But then Ann Voskamp, she talks about how naming is Edenic, and like that has just always, and I don't know if I'm saying that right because I don't know how to pronounce words I read, but that has always just been such a powerful phrase to me, and like the power in naming something like that is how we were created to name. Like that was Adam's job, that was Eve's job to name, and there was a power in it, but also like you said, the vulnerability, because what if they do it wrong? And they started to, but
Yes. Yeah, and we do get it wrong. I, you know, and but to me that's the yin and yang of confidence and humility as well. Right? It's the I'm going to show up here. Here's what I think. I just went through this I won't go into the story because I know we're running out of time, but it's that here's what I think, you know. Here's what I think to the best of my knowledge. And that again, that's kind of going back to what I said at the beginning. It's the doctor who says to me, you know, I can't be 100% sure, but here's to the best of my knowledge what I think. I'm going to trust that doctor more than the one who promises me the moon. And that, you know, that's just an example from medicine, but I think it applies to our spiritual lives and our emotions and all of the above.
Okay, well, as we wrap up this portion, like, first of all, thank you for once again, just not just your time here, but for bringing a gift for all of us lay people who don't walk in the circles that you walk in, don't have the education you have, to give us these tools that we can have in our own daily lives and our relationships. Like, it really is profound, and you don't have to do that for us, and you do. So, thank you for that. How can our listeners engage with you and the new book?
Yeah, so I have my own podcast, The Best of You podcast, dralisoncook.com. The book, I Shouldn't Feel This Way, when you pre-order it, you get the first three chapters, so you'll kind of get right into the naming and framing components that we talked about today. There's a guided journal you'll get, as well as this masterclass I was telling you about that has some bonus content that wasn't in the book, where I kind of talk a little bit more about how I arrived at this framework.
Okay.
Awesome. Pre-ordering it right now on it. Yeah, that's awesome. And then the best news it for us is that you're going to stick around and do a bonus interview with us, and we're going to ask you the question so you can start preparing what has been left unsaid And so our listeners can find that on Patreon and join our community to watch that interview with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys. You're awesome.
And that wraps up another episode of the Dauntless Grace Exchange. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app and leave a review so other people can find us.
You can follow us on social media to stay connected. We're on Instagram at Dauntless Grace Ministries, and our Facebook page is Dauntless Grace.
For more about the Enneagram, visit our website at dauntlessgrace.org for coaching and training opportunities. And you can follow me at Enneagram Megan on Instagram.
And be sure to check out our website for more information about today's podcast. Plus, you can click the resources tab to find books by all the authors we've spoken to or about. And you can find it at dauntlessgrace.org.